Hello and welcome to PEP's Encourage Parents, Encourage Kids podcast. Our latest episode, When Asking Kids to Hang Up and Hang Out Isn't Enough with Deborah Heitner, features a conversation with our host and PEP parent educator, Robbie Fox, who followed up with Deborah, an author and speaker on helping children thrive in the age of technology. Deborah was featured in a PEP webinar, Critical Topics in Parenting, talking with kids about social media and mental health. Deborah and Robbie discuss the addictiveness of technology, social media's influence on children's mental health, how to have conversations with kids about technology, and best practices for this new world we live in. Deborah is the author of Screenwise, and her new best-selling book, Growing Up in Public, was released in September 2023. Deborah, thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you for having me.
The stakes to parents seem so high around technology use. You hear things about the impact of violent games and is that increasing violence? You hear about social media increasing mental health issues and anxiety and depression. So it's hard not to parent around technology from a place of fear. What I really appreciate about your webinar is you kind of shared a different perspective about how we can incorporate technology in positive ways, because as much as we'd like to go back to the days of rotary phones and three TV channels have long since gone, and we kind of need to embrace the here and now. So what I'd like to do is kind of follow up on some of those themes, especially from the lens of at PEP, we like to talk about the four C's, the importance of parenting to help our kids feel the sense of being capable, as if they count, as if they have courage, and then also connection. And then a fifth C is curiosity. So some of the things I heard in the webinar, one clearly was mentoring and modeling over monitoring or controlling, which is kind of our natural instinct, balancing both time online and offline, and also kind of balancing content. So incorporating all this from a parenting standpoint, it can all take time to navigate. And you talked a little bit about that in the webinar. And parents are often looking for a rule book. So there's no real rule book when it comes to technology use. And you talked about a lot of different considerations. So what thoughts do you have to share about setting limits, whether it's age limits on when they should get a phone, time limits, that sort of thing? And I know it's kind of a broad question, but what thoughts do you have around that?
I think parents would do well to think about how they can stop being the police of their kids' screen time and focus on what is that experience like? What are they doing with screens? Are they being creative versus consuming? Are they connecting with friends or family? Are they doing solo things that are enhancing their learning? And then look at what else kids are doing. Like, if you want that balance, and I think we all want that balance, we don't want our kids to have screens for heads. So what else are they doing? Are they building with Lego? Are they getting outside either to exercise or maybe to just do something useful like shovel snow, right? We need to really think about how our kids' lives look as a whole instead of trying to count the minutes of screen time. I think once we get into being the cops or the police of the minutes, we've really become very focused on a very minute battle. And then we are just looking at a power struggle.
Any ideas about how to approach kids about that? I definitely understand what you're saying about like focusing on the quality versus the quantity. But I think sometimes parents, the kids are sucked into the game or sucked into the phone or whatever, have a hard time broaching those conversations.
The time to have a conversation with your kids is not when they're in the middle of the game. Like the time to have a big picture conversation about screen time and its role in your life and any balance you might want to change or any tech habits that they have that you don't like, or that maybe that you have that they don't like. The time to do that is when you have their attention, not when they're scrolling their phone, not when they're on the fifth level of the game trying to win. If you're trying to talk about the big picture of screen time while your kid is actively playing Minecraft, that's going to be a lose-lose situation. A good time to talk to kids about tech is also to make sure that we're focused on grounding, helping them ground in their bodies. So if they are very absorbed, for example, in a video game, one of the things to do if that transition is rough is to make sure that they're grounding in their bodies afterwards. And so ideally, you're helping kids remember that to transition away from those things, they need to ground in their body, drink a glass of water, do some breathing exercises, smell the flowers, blow the candles. Anything that grounds in the body is going to really help them come back for the next activity. And so also, if you're talking to them and they don't want to change their habits, I think it's important to think about like what would motivate them, like what are they frustrated about the ways screens might be affecting their lives, or what do they see as some issues that they want to work on?
There's been a lot printed about the intentional addictivity that these games and apps are designed around. Do you suggest parents talk about that with their kids?
That's such a great question. I think that it is important to talk to kids about the ways games and social apps are designed to keep us there. Like Snapchat streaks with their little hourglass ticking away are designed to stress us out and make us feel like, oh no, I'm missing out. I'm hurting my friend if I don't come back and keep this streak going. Or apps that have little reminders, the like button, of course, is definitely designed to keep us there. And letting kids know how much that's designed with human brains in mind is also very humanizing, because we're not then saying, why do you care so much about likes? Why do you care so much about your follower count? Why do you care so much about getting to the next level of the game? If we can acknowledge that, hey, the game was designed with the same design principles that they're using in Vegas to keep people gambling at the table and losing against the house every single day, and that's actually putting us both on the same side, where it's you and me, kid, against these design principles. And how can we make sure that we are running our devices and they're not running us?
Oh, that's great. Yeah, kind of putting them on the same team.
Yeah, like I'm here with you. I have this problem too. And I struggle to walk away from TikTok too, or I struggle to walk away from Twitter as well.
Right. And that goes back to the modeling piece that you talk about so much in the webinar is what are we as parents modeling with regard to that? Growing up, back in the day, you could hear your parents talking on the phone and they could hear you talking on the phone and how you answered the phone. And there was kind of societal guidelines around you don't call a house phone at 1 a.m. And now with everything kind of done quietly and secretly, do you suggest parents kind of be transparent about their own use of their technology and talking about what they're doing to walk away and that sort of thing?
Absolutely. Because when we were growing up, our parents' phone use was in the kitchen or in front of us so much of the time. I mean, occasionally my mother would, if something was very private, go upstairs and take the call in her bedroom. But almost always we could hear everything that she said to her friends, whether it was about her marriage, her work, like we, if she was in a fight with a friend, we pretty much knew about it. But the good thing about that transparency is it also modeled a lot of the tech etiquette that we want our kids to have. We heard how people's voices change when they were trying to get off the phone with someone. Now we're just thumbing it out. It's very private. So we, as much as possible, we should narrate to our kids, hey, this is such a tricky situation that I'm going to call the person because we're having a misunderstanding on text, or this is really big news and I don't want to hit the person with this on text. I'm going to give them a call, right? So it's really important that we think about how not transparent our texting is and how private it is compared with our parents' use of phones, and that that takes away a kind of an automatic opportunity to model where we weren't explicitly taught a lot of things, but maybe we picked them up anyway. And our kids aren't getting that by osmosis. So we have to be really explicit and teach them how to write appropriate texts and maybe when to send an email or call instead.
Right. And that raises the issue of that. It's not texting or online silent communication is not always appropriate. I know one thing that I used with my kids, and I still do today as young adults, is we had acronym NATC, which stood for not a text conversation. Mm-hmm. If they wanted to ask me a question, I'm kind of like, either the answer is going to take too long, or maybe I'm driving, or maybe I really kind of hear what's going on in the background to see really where they are and how they're sounding. And that's something I know I've shared with a lot of people. And I told my kids ahead of time, when I send NATC, it means you need to call me. And it sent the message that exactly what you were saying, that there are some things that need voice to voice. And you talked about like, you know, needing our kids to learn how to self-regulate, which is so important. Because like you said, they go off to college, so there's not going to be a hall monitor coming in and saying, okay, it's 11 o'clock, off your phone. What are some specific suggestions to help lead them to self-regulation? Do you suggest any things like tech-free times or tech-free zones in the household?
Yeah, I mean, you can certainly set up your home with some attractive unplugged spaces, and you can certainly set up and leave some things that are attractive to do like out and about. So a guitar that's in the case in the garage is never going to get played, right? So making sure that guitar is hanging on the wall and accessible to our kids, making sure there's art supplies around that they can use, making sure there's board games that are not tucked away so neatly that no one wants to disturb them, right? So we want to make sure that there's other stuff to do and that our whole house isn't designed around the best and brightest of screens, so that those attractive unplugged spaces can kind of lure us in to like, maybe I'll do a little sketching, maybe I'll build a little something, Right. Otherwise, I think a lot of times our homes are designed like the comfiest chair is by the TV or the Wii.
Yeah. So we have all these things kind of set out, and maybe we have a list on the refrigerator of things you can do that are not online, but our kids still aren't taking advantage of that. Any suggestions to kind of nudge that along a little bit?
Well, I mean, absolutely. You can certainly like shut them down at the modem level or whatever, but I think I would also let them be a little bored. Like maybe they aren't going to immediately go from "you kicked me off the computer" or "I'm done with my screen time" to "I'm going to immediately go design this epic thing in Legos" or "I'm going to go make a 4-course meal." But over time, if they're bored enough, they will take up other hobbies and interests.
So sometimes we as parents do need to kind of step in and say, okay, enough has been spent doing this. And now we have all these other things to do, and not yeah. just assume that they're going to just jump at the opportunity to play the guitar or draw.
No, I think that sometimes we may need to nudge it. I mean, I do think too, though, that like not making things into a chore, like we don't necessarily want to turn guitar into a have to or turn reading into a have to. I mean, I think that the ELA reading logs sometimes already have like done enough to like ruin reading for our kids. We have to be careful of that too.
So you mentioned like shutting things off at the router and that sort of thing. There certainly is a lot of technology that parents can utilize, the router level, limits on the phone and that sort of thing. What are your thoughts around parents utilizing those?
I would rather see parents shut things off at the router than like track and spy on their kids. I think using tech to sort of win against your kids when it's shutting something down is different because it can minimize some of the fighting. I mean, that said, I wouldn't surprise them with that. But if they know like, okay, the router goes off at 10 p.m., then they can kind of expect that. I think that's helpful because it can build a habit.
So sometimes using that router, it's kind of an outside authority.
I guess the internet's over, right? Because the TV used to kind of turn off for us. So having that, I think that's very different, again, than using tech to sort of block specific things or to especially to track and like read the things that our kids say. I think that's can lead to more problematic interactions and a loss of trust. I think simply giving kids time limits on a specific app or with some flexibility for special occasions or special needs situations, right? Like if your kid is planning a TikTok all day with their friends, maybe that's not the day to like limit TikTok if that they're actually shooting and reshooting and trying to get it right. But at the same time, they know maybe that scrolling has been a problem on TikTok or YouTube, limiting the time on that app, again, with a conversation with them. Like this isn't something I would do kind of completely externally to kids, but I would really engage with them about how they're feeling about their habits.
Right. So that kind of speaks to your theme about balance. It's what they're doing. Are they passively scrolling through TikTok or are they spending time creating content for TikTok? Are they passively scrolling through YouTube, or are they looking at how-to videos on doing something away from the computer? So a lot of that takes time, right? And parents, like you mentioned, they might have multiple kids and it can be exhausting. I know you mentioned the webinar, some parents are like, hey, I have a job too. And it's not just tracking my kids' technology use. What do you say to parents who are like, how am I possibly supposed to have the time to manage all this?
I think mentoring is more work in some ways than trying to use tech to monitor what our kids do. But the results, the payoff is that our kids' internal filter is going to be better than any filter you can put on your computer. You want them to be able to have that internal judgment to say, oh, this group text is not going in a good direction out of here, versus having to be the one who catches them, sees it a week later and tells them later, that wasn't a good group text, right? That's not as helpful as them getting to that place in their own judgment and discernment. And that's going to happen by trial and error, including them making some mistakes. And we have to be able to tolerate that as parents to be able to mentor versus simply monitor our kids.
So it's kind of short-term pain for a longer-term gain.
Right. And it is absolutely more work, but it also, you can pick your battles. Like maybe if you only let them text the first year that they have a phone, then you're not dealing with social media that first year. You're just dealing with texting and just mentoring on texting. You could also outsource potentially some of your mentoring if you don't have time. Maybe your kids have an older cousin who's following them on TikTok or following them on Instagram or Snapchat. You could remind your kid that your cousin, who presumably has reached some age of discernment will tell me, mom or dad, that if something really horrendous is going on, is on there, right? So like, is there someone there who, if things are really concerning, will give me a call? That could be helpful to remind kids. And just to remind kids too, that someone's parents might be there is a good reality check. In that group text, somebody's dad might see that. And so you don't want to be the kid dropping the F-bombs every day and creating that negative impression of yourself, because when that dad is planning the eighth grade graduation party, you might not make the list. But it is realistic to say somebody's dad is probably on the group text. And if you want to be the one who gets invited when three kids get to go see the baseball game, that dad might have a problematic impression of you, or that's a not accurate impression of you if all you're doing is using bad language. So I think we need to give kids accurate information about reputation, for example, and what they say about themselves that applies in the moment, that applies right now when you're 12 versus some future outcome that probably isn't really watching you and is also developmentally inappropriate to talk about when you're 12.
And that's a great reminder, just because you're not reading everything that your child's posting, making sure they're aware that some other parent might be. And so assume that whatever you're writing is not just going to the person or persons you think are reading it. I think even adults sometimes forget that. So in talking about parents, another thing you talked about in terms of back in the day, when you could hear these phone conversations and that sort of thing, there were kind of unspoken societal guidelines about you don't call the house phone after 1 a.m. And now there's really no unspoken rules. There's no sense of community or commonality around some of this, because the tech rules in one person's house might be kind of strict, and someone else, they have absolutely, it's a wild, wild west and there's no limits whatsoever. Have you come across in any of the schools or places we work where parents have kind of developed a community around this, or how parents have kind of initiated conversations about, hey, can we kind of come to some agreements?
I think parents would love to get everyone in their friend group and their kids' friend group parents on the same page around tech. And I do think we're moving towards some shared sense as a society of like, oh, maybe kids shouldn't be texting in the middle of the night, for example. But there is always going to be that one kid that does, which is why your kid needs their phone on airplane mode, or ideally not in their room, because there's always going to be that one kid. I think it's important, though, that we don't try to get everyone to sort of hew to our line, but that we're instead really curious about what other parents are doing and why. And if there's an opportunity to ask a parent, like, what do you wish you'd known before you got your kid a phone? Or what do you wish you'd known before you greenlit Roblox? And certainly nobody wants their kid to be the one kid that doesn't get invited to things. And that is really tricky. So one other thing I would say is, if you're the parent who gets a kid a phone in the single digit ages or low double digits, the 9, the 10, make sure they are being inclusive of their friends that don't have phones. Make sure they do know how to reach those friends. Make sure they know if it's okay to text that kid's dad or mom about plans. We don't want our kids leaving other kids out if we go the early route. And if we've gone the later route, which many of us choose to do, and again, I'm not here to say that that's the wrong call either, then we should be reaching out to other parents, maybe in our kids' friend community, if we know them, if we're lucky enough to have those connections, to say, hey, if you're all going to the beach, text me because my kid doesn't have a phone yet. Then I'll pass that on, and that kind of thing. And then you're going to deal with the inconvenience. And this is why a lot of people end up getting their kids' phones. You're going to deal with the inconvenience of their sort of press secretary for a while, which I think is the thing that drives a lot of parents of very socially active 11-year-olds to get phones, because they're like, I can't deal with getting all these texts. And this is where I kind of wished we had brought back a house phone.
That's a great point about the fact that we might have our kids' ear better at fifth grade, sixth grade than we will at eighth grade, when they're really starting to individuate, separate from us. So instead of looking for a particular age, what are some traits to look for in our kids? And you talked about like impulse control and some other things. Can you go over some of those factors again?
Yeah, absolutely. So before we get kids a phone, we want to notice, are they impulsive? Are they someone who will fly off the handle if someone ticks them off a little bit? Can they keep a confidence? Are they liable to share news without checking first? Are they quick to anger? Or are they able to be accountable for their actions? Do they apologize and make things right when they do mess up, which is inevitable? We all mess up. Are they super impatient? Are they going to freak out when they can't reach someone and text them 9 million times? That wouldn't be a reason to hold off on a phone, but it would be a reason maybe to do some training on controlling that urge. Are they going to be able to manage the distraction? Do they lose things all the time? There are kids who are pretty disorganized. They may need to practice with a cheaper phone. I wouldn't get them a very fancy phone to start.
So there's been lots of talk about how social media affects mental health of teens and tweens, and maybe even of younger children. And there's different schools of thought around that. And I know it's in terms of if a teen's feeling kind of some sense of not feeling good about their body, it can exasperate those feelings. What are some strategies for teaching tweens and teens to recognize the impact social media might be having on their mental health and to be able to take a break from it?
I love this question. I think some of the ways we can help kids recognize how social media is making them feel are actually using a mood meter and talking about it. I mean, most kids aren't going to want to walk around with like a red through purple mood meter or something, but just like introducing that language and talking about how we feel and just normalizing the fact that we can go to social media when we're feeling bored or lonely, and it might change that around. It might shift us to feeling much better, or it might make us feel more bored, more lonely, more frustrated. So I think it's important to really notice how you actually feel after you use social, because a lot of the reasons we go there, sometimes if we're paying attention, it's like, wait, I didn't get what I wanted. So also paying attention to how other things make us feel, like getting lost in a puzzle or a good book and noticing, oh, do I feel actually better when I do that or worse? And it takes a long time. So I think we shouldn't expect kids to immediately grasp this and act on it perfectly.
Right. Well, and but that raises a good point, because even adults, I mean, I hear what you say about learning those things. I mean, there are times when I've realized I'm picking a phone up because I'm bored and I'm scrolling through Instagram or Facebook or TikTok or whatever and realizing I don't feel better afterward. So do you suggest parents kind of be transparent about the impact it's having on them as well?
I think it's fair to talk to the kids about, yeah, like sometimes when I look at Instagram, I feel a little bit left out, or sometimes when I look at Instagram, I feel insecure. I think we all need to have a sense of humor about social media. Like one of the things that kind of makes me laugh is when parents say, oh, kids are only posting on social for attention. I'm like, oh, why do you post on social? Is it not for attention? Like we're all here trying to get attention.
Right. Yeah, I love what you talked about in the webinar about parents being mindful of what they're sharing about their kids online. And if you go back and look and see what they shared before their kids had technology, my nephew and his wife had a child and they use something called Tiny Beans, and it's an email that comes out every day and it's got recent pictures and videos that they've uploaded, and they've been very cognizant about not posting things about their child who just turned one until that child has a voice in it. I really appreciate the respect shown from that. But I thought that was a great point, that if parents want our children to be mindful about what they're sharing and posting, we also need to be mindful of that.
100% we need to be mindful. It is so wrong that kids get to be 12 and 13 and find their parents' social media and then are like, oh my gosh, I am the star of my parents' social media. So I think when we're posting our 4 and 5 year olds, we have to think about them as that future self-conscious 13-year-old and plan accordingly, which might mean like, if in doubt, don't share it out.
Yeah, I got called out for that. But my daughter, when she was, I think, about 15 or 16, and I posted pictures of her at the beach and her with her friends in bathing suits. And she's like, Mom, it's like, oh, good point. Had to take that down.
Yeah, but I mean, the fact that you had the respect for her to take it down and not be like, you're wrong, I'm right, but to actually say, oh, I totally see that. And as a mom, you don't see your kid in a sexual way or in a, right? Like, that's just not what you're seeing. You're just seeing her having fun and you're so happy that she's having a good time and that she has nice friends and you're at the beach and isn't this wonderful? And then to realize like, oh yeah, strangers on the internet are going to view a 15-year-old's body in a very different way than that's viewed in the family.
So kind of going back to these tweens and teens, what questions would you ask to kind of start a conversation to explore these things about what they feel they're getting out of some of these apps or video games too, not just the social media?
Yeah. So, I mean, I would ask kids like, what's your favorite thing about this app? I would ask them to show you something. When I talk to my kid about this game, he's playing this World War II game and he knows seriously way more about World War II than me and my husband now. Like my kid knows so much about World War II now and was asking me all about the ways the tensions around the Spanish Civil War played into World War II. And this all comes from a video game. So do I want my kid playing a video game instead of sleeping at night or doing homework? No. Or instead of eating or seeing friends or grandma face to face? No. But do I think this game is actually really awesome for him and like a really great way to spend time with friends and learn about history? Yes. So games are not the enemy.
So in that case, your son's probably maybe connecting with the people who are playing the video game with them. What about parents who don't feel that their kids are getting things out of the content? How do they kind of approach the subject?
I do think like competence is another one. I say that all the time. Like if your kid is really good at Minecraft, you should feel like you can brag on them just as much as if they were really good at chess or lacrosse. Mm-hmm. And I really mean that. Like the skills to be good at Minecraft are things you should absolutely feel like you can brag about at a dinner party if that's how you roll. just as much as if your kid was like a gymnast and they were like winning trophies, if you feel like it's pointless, like say they're scrolling and they're not creating, like there are like some dumb shooters that, okay, it's harder to feel excited that your kid is just playing a game where all they do is shoot things, or even more so watching other people play that game. Like they're on YouTube and they're watching other people play the game. I mean, I think the classic response to like, why do kids watch people game on YouTube would be like, well, why did you just watch the World Cup? Like, why not go play soccer yourself? And they're going to say, well, watching these people be really good at the game is like it is for you watching Japan beat Croatia or whatever. On the other hand, if you feel like you want to see them also play the game or also engage and have the competence experience, then you can push them to do that. I know Carl Hooker, my buddy, who's an ed tech guy in Austin, Texas, he does have his kids show him like, what are the hacks you learned? Like, okay, you're in Minecraft. Great, that's awesome. What are the hacks that you've learned in Minecraft? I want you to show me in the game when we play together. And that's a parent who's willing to put his money where his mouth is because he's actually gaming with his kids. I would suggest gaming with kids is great. I play board games with my kid. We have other ways of engaging. But if you can do that, or if you can know the game well enough even to call your kid out on like a complete fib, like if your kid's like, I can come to dinner, but I'm almost done with this level. If Zelda well enough to be like, you are nowhere near done the level. You haven't even killed the dwarf yet. Then I think that's helpful to just have that credibility. And then they're like, oh, I guess I can't snow mom about whether I'm done with this level or not because she actually knows the game. If you think it's not the highest and best use of your time, I would pick their battles. So in other words, say they're watching a lot of dumb videos about squirrels and you don't feel like this is the highest and best use of their time, but they're getting everything else done. They're fine. They're still seeing friends. They have a balanced life. I would think about, am I going to pick this battle? If they're looking at channels, like if your kid is looking at channels that are espousing hate, if they're looking at content that is reinforcing an eating disorder, if they're looking at content that's reinforcing negative messages about mental health, then I would intervene. But that's where you do need to maybe get involved at the media literacy level and really look at like, okay, who is this person? Let's do a little research about this channel and find out more about what this person stands for.
So that kind of the curating the content. So yeah, our parents may not have felt singing to a hairbrush in the mirror was a good use of our time back in the day to the same song over and over again. But to your point though, if you're not a gamer or don't know anything about a particular app, turning to our kids and saying, hey, can you show me this is also a way of making them feel capable. And also that we're turning to them as an expert and finding ways to use technology to do that is another way of using technology in a positive way.
And that is part of mentoring too. Like having them teach you is part of mentoring. Just like if you had a new employee at work, like I teach you a process. Now you teach me a process. And like in teaching each other the process or in having my kids show me like how they do internet search, if I ask him to help me plan our family vacation, I'm going to learn where my kid is uber competent and where my kid has no clue. And even like sometimes my kid will be drawn to some pretty problematic content because he wants to see how problematic it is. Like he wants to see like what is the other side saying? And so one of the ideas I did kind of encourage him to think about is you don't want to marinate your brain in stuff that's really gross. Like you don't want to give them the clicks because they make money. Like if you're talking about a monetized YouTube channel, like you are actually supporting it when you watch it. And he was like, oh, never mind. I'm not going to watch that terrible person now. Like he was so terrible. I thought it was funny. And my friends and I were laughing about it, but I agree that I don't want to support it and give it the clicks. And that actually helps.
Technology literacy or kind of it. So it sounds like maybe in your household, it's not a one and done kind of conversation. Not like we don't just talk to our kids maybe one time about sex or one time about drinking. It's this ongoing dialogue where you're asking the open-ended questions to find out more and then making sure it's this ongoing education is what I'm hearing.
And truly what you're trying to do is set your kid up for success and their own discernment. You're not even trying to like win every battle. You're trying to get them to like not make the same mistakes a million times. Okay, you looked at porn and you're really upset by it and it's really gross to you. Like, how are you going to avoid doing it again? Are you going to raise a kid to the age of 18 who will never have seen anything problematic, who will never have said the wrong thing in a group chat? Unlikely, unless they're completely offline. And that has its own problems. Like learning to be online in college when the stakes are higher might not be ideal. Like it might be better to make a few mistakes in middle school when at least most discerning adults around you will say, well, that kid is in middle school. Let's give them another chance because we understand how development works.
what sort of suggestions do you have to develop sleep habits to balance screen time and getting enough rest? And I know you said like putting the phone on airplane mode, but I can hear parents right now going, and the second I walk out of that room, it's going off airplane. Yeah. That sounds great. And actually just a little story. When my youngest, we used to have kind of a technology bedtime, and the technology bedtime applied to me as well. And my youngest went off to college and I was like, woohoo, I can stay on my iPad playing Words with Friends or whatever until 11 o'clock at night. And I tried to go to sleep and I couldn't.
So yeah, I mean, the last group of kids before the pandemic that I got to meet, these lovely high school kids when I was still on the road all the time, I was in Portland, Oregon, and they had their big cups of coffee with them because they were like hardworking high school kids and they were tired and they needed that coffee to fuel through the day. And I said to them, if you could have access to a drug that was free and legal and had no bad effects on you, and it just made you smarter and better looking, more athletic and in a better mood, would you want it? And they were like, we do. We would want it. And I was like, it's sleep, y'all. And they were sort of stricken and stunned. Because I think that we need kids to get the message that sleep is desirable, that it will make them better looking. It will put them in a better mood. They're going to get in less trouble at school. They're going to be more athletic and make their athletic goals. And as much as possible with teenagers, I would have someone else give them that message, not just you, but also their coach or debate club person. Like anyone who can give that message to teenagers who's not their parents is automatically like way ahead of the parents. So what happens is you have the parents going to bed at 10. The kids are like, oh, I'm just going to finish one more thing. I'll go to bed at 10:30. You have no idea when they're actually going to bed because you went to bed. I'm very sympathetic to it. But I think as much as possible, you have to try to outlast them more than not, because otherwise you will not know that they went to sleep.
Right. But you can shut off the technology.
You can shut off the technology. You can do a lot of things, but you ideally at least a few nights a week want to see them actually like go to bed. And I know everybody's situation is different. Everyone's work life is different. Of course, like very clear that if you're working at night or something, like you do the best you can. And ultimately it is kids' own responsibility when they're teenagers to get themselves to bed. But that's where it comes in handy to hear it from like a teacher or a coach. If the AP bio teacher says, actually there's data that shows if you sleep more and study less, right? Like you do want to study, but if you stay up all night and study, you're actually not going to do as well as if you study a little bit before bed, go to bed, get your sleep, maybe look it over one more time in the morning, go to school. You'll actually do better on the test than if you do an all-nighter. But if it's your coach or your bio teacher or your advisor that you look up to, someone who you trust that's not in that authority position making you go to bed, that's really helpful. Because hearing it from your parents when you're 16 or something is rough, even if it's true.
Yeah.
But and being able to put that boundary up with your friends is important too. Being able to say to friends, like, I can't be in the group text all night, or say to a boyfriend or girlfriend, like, don't text me in the middle of the night.
So Devorah, this has all been great. We're going to include in the show notes information about your website and books and other resources. I know that you mentioned in the webinar and a few things that you mentioned in this as well. I just want to kind of end with just a few questions, rapid fire. What's your favorite family use of technology?
I mean, we just love to watch a family show. I know that sounds so basic, but we watched all of Friday Night Lights during the pandemic. Watching shows as a family gives us a real opportunity to come together, to talk about things and talk about sometimes issues that wouldn't, like with Friday Night Lights, wouldn't have come up in his life yet, that are important, and just also really good bonding time as a family.
Right. So kind of interactively watching where you talk about
And it's not like we sit down after each episode and like have an hour long chat, but we'll talk about our parental authority. And I'm like, well, do you want coach or do you want Mrs. Coach? Like we have like different characters from the show but also we talk about like, wow, there's some really bad parenting on that show. Like there's a lot of really bad parenting on Friday Night Lights. A lot of those kids have really interesting teenage lives, but they have essentially no functional parents.
Okay. And what I know this is really an unfair question to ask someone who's such an expert in this area, but what's your favorite parenting resource around technology? Your books, obviously, but outside of those.
I think talking to kids on a regular basis is my best thing, and talking to other parents, because I'm at school. So I have a huge advantage in this role with my own family because I'm constantly talking with kids and talking with parents. So I would say like, I'm glad I'm talking to other people, because it'd be very easy to just generalize from my own experience. And talking with kids is so eye-opening, because I think that's what helps you see the fun ways to use apps. I think the fact that kids are very smart in general about social media and how it sucks us in, I think in some ways they get it more than adults do, that it's a performance, that they have some distance from it, that they have a sense of humor about it.
just sort of getting curious with your with kids and other parents as a way to understand rather than to debate. And that's a great place for parents to start, I guess, when they're kind of struggling with all this, is just talking to the parents saying, hey, how do you handle this in your house? Or asking kids the questions about what are you getting out of this? And starting from that, realizing we don't have to have all the answers coming into this. Some of it is like knowing what questions to ask, just to gather the information and start those conversations.
Screen time is so stigmatized that we almost don't want to admit to other parents that our kids have any, especially when they're younger. And I think if we can be more open about like, hey, we're watching shows. What are some good shows? Like really being in conversation with other parents, because they may have good advice. And you can ask a parent of a kid who's a little older than your kid, like, what are some things you wish you knew before you greenlit a PlayStation or Roblox or Snapchat? And you'll be really glad you asked, because they're going to tell you, and they might say, oh, I totally regret letting my kid have Snapchat. And that's really good information. Or they might be like, oh, the first 2 months were terrible, but then I figured out X and now we have a system and it's great. And so it's like, you can benefit from that person's experience. But if you're too kind of mortified that your kid has any screen time or feel judgy about other parents, then you can't really even go there.
Yeah, we tend to pile on a lot of guilt and shame as parents when it comes to technology use. Devorah, this has been awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much to Robbie Fox and Devorah Heitner for this conversation. To access the webinar referenced throughout this episode, go to pepparent.org and click on Critical Topics in Parenting in the Online Programs tab. The webinar was called Talking with Kids About Social Media and Mental Health. Also at pepparent.org, you can see our program schedule of live webinars, masterclasses, and on-demand videos, plus blog posts and many other resources for parents of preschoolers through teens. For more information about Devorah, her website is devorahheitner.com. Her second best-selling book, Growing Up in Public, Coming of Age in the Digital World, was released in September 2023. It's a guide to navigating reputation, privacy, and boundaries with our kids who are growing up in a world where it feels like everyone is watching. If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider making a tax-deductible donation to PEP through the donate button on our homepage, pepparent.org. Thanks again for joining us. And remember, parenting requires the courage to be imperfect. PEP is here to provide you with that courage.